to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's me, Richie T, and we got DJ Rob, and Hello. Also visiting with us is Keetra Jane. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we've mentioned you before here. And I hope you don't mind the term, but to relate it back to how people will know who you are, the Taylor Swift lookalike.
Who starred in Alex Boyer's video.
Yeah.
Yep.
How this all came about was Rob, who apparently I'm finding out today was a DJ. DJing a wedding, and saw you doing a modeling shoot across the way. And as I envision it, Rob left what he was doing as far as the DJ gig and ran and went, Keetra, wait, we need to get you. We need to get you on the Cultural Hall.
Exactly.
Hang on one second.
That's exactly what went down, actually.
And she was like, "Who are you?"
Yeah. Pretty much.
But she trusted me enough to give me her phone number, and we communicated, and she's here with us today. So thank you for coming.
She saw the wedding ring and was like, "Man, no worries. You're not wearing your wedding ring. Uh-oh,
no,
don't tell the wife of the party."
I won't.
Who's out of town right now?
She's
oh my
in
gosh.
New York City. I know, seriously.
It's okay. Richie's here for buffer, so.
I'll keep you two apart from each other.
Perfect.
I want to get to know you a little bit, and then I also want to know all about this whole looking like someone famous thing. But off mic, you talked about being from a small town.
Mm-hmm.
So what small town are you from?
I grew up in Central Washington.
Okay.
In an area called the Columbia Basin.
The Columbia Basin?
Mm-hmm.
So the Columbia River is what I think of automatically.
Yes, the Columbia River. And it's an agricultural community. So my dad farms. He's a dairyman.
Cool.
Ooh.
And I grew up just driving tractors with my brothers. I didn't do as much dirty work as they did because I was the only girl.
Sure.
But my dad raised us to work hard and have good work ethic. And I think that's something that's really carried with me into my life.
Nice.
Really appreciated it.
So was it like getting up early, milking cows kind of stuff sometimes?
No.
No, you didn't do that?
4:30, time for milking. She gets it.
I did. All summer, my summers were pretty much spent doing whatever dad wanted us to do. Usually it was just running the baler or running tractor. So sometimes we'd be up at like 3, 4 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
Up at the crack of dawn, driving out to some field that's like a half an hour away or an hour away, and just running pretty much all day. Sometimes we'd run through the night too. If, you know, it's all dependent on moisture levels and things like that. So.
Yeah, because you have to cut when it's dry and can dry out before it rains. Mm-hmm.
It also has to have like a certain amount of moisture in it before you can bale it and stuff. Otherwise, it's combustible. So.
Then your fields start on fire. And that's the last thing that you want is your fields starting on fire. So pretty fascinating that you're from such a small town. Are there a lot of Mormon folk in that town? Or in that basin, I guess?
I'd say it's like 80% Catholic.
So do you have a branch that you belong to, or was
no,
it a ward?
No, so there's a ward, and then there's a branch where they have Spanish services.
Okay.
I was one of like 3 Caucasian girls in my high school. And
The
majority was Hispanic.
Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And
is that just because of the farm working?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the area was actually settled by my grandparents and like a couple other small families, and then it just has really grown over the last decade or so. But it was settled by church members. So
cool.
You have like that really strong ward that has like really good family roots and stuff. And
they've been here since 18, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Brigham told them to come and they did.
I love it though, because there's such a sense of unity there and everybody is really like family. You know, you go home and you want to see everybody and make sure you get to talk to everybody when you go to church, and you don't want to miss church because you won't see
all
the people you love, you know.
Yeah, that's
everybody's
good.
Really supportive, and I feel like the dynamic there is just so different from anything you find here, even up in Idaho. You know, you just have like that small town feel, that family feel, and like that ward that you've just been in your whole life. The boundaries never change. So,
you know, it would be an interesting thing too, because it's pretty small for then you to leave and come here to Utah. You're attending the University of Utah right now.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some like, "Hey, family, I guess I'm leaving for a while"? Was there like this?
I'm going to the big city.
Pack up the horse and go.
Yeah.
It was a lot of kids go out of state for school. In fact, I'd say that's almost the cultural norm, at least with the LDS kids.
Yeah.
So a lot of my friends go to BYU. I even have friends at BYU Hawaii. I'd say the majority go to Ricks, mm-hmm. BYU Idaho. That's where I started before I transferred down here. And then me and my brother and a couple other people go to state schools outside of the state. So coming back, it doesn't really feel like you're ostracized or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same when you come back. I would say there's a little bit of rivalry back home with like BYU students.
Really?
And going to a state school, especially since I go to University of Utah.
Yeah.
So with like the holy war that just happened and everything, you get some like resentment.
So why did you choose Utah over BYU?
I think it's so much more beautiful up in Salt Lake.
Amen.
Provo's not my town. I don't know. I came.
Are you enjoying it at the U though?
Yeah, I love the U. Good. I love the university. It's fun. And I feel like there's just so many more opportunities to have like jobs in the medical field here, because that's what I'm going into.
What are you
going to
do?
So I'm applying to the nursing program, but I recently switched my major to psychology with a minor in nutrition.
Oh, cool.
Just in light of the recent body dysmorphia things. You know,
cool.
Trying to educate people. I want to do it on more of a scientific level than just like, here I am, this is my experience. Because when you have that knowledge, you are able to help more people.
Is that something that then you've struggled with?
Uh-huh.
Can we talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, we can totally talk about it.
Okay.
Totally comfortable. So I struggled with bulimia and anorexia from a pretty young age.
And now, just in case people don't know, I'm aware of the difference between anorexia and bulimia, but let's just define it for...
Yeah, so anorexia is when you limit your food intake or you don't eat at all. And bulimia is where you're eating, and it can be really any amount. Like, you can overeat or undereat, but you're, like, purging after you eat.
Yeah,
and
just
so,
throwing up.
Mm-hmm. So you don't really get, like, the calories that you need. In some cases, some people, you'll find with bulimia, people have more of a normal body weight, usually, because their body starts to hold on to some of the calories. Hmm. So you actually start to digest in your mouth, not even your stomach.
Hmm.
If that makes sense, like carbohydrates digest in your mouth.
Wow.
So in some cases, like extreme cases, like people will actually be what's called like skinny fat when they are bulimic, and their body will hold on to like some of the nutrients or some of the carbs and like not the important nutrients. So you'll see like people will have like really, really dry skin, or in my case, like some of my hair fell out. I lost my eyelashes last year. So you kind of just like, you have these like weird little, like you're like healthy looking, but you're not healthy at all. Like, your body's like seriously struggling. So I kind of went back and forth between the two for, it's been almost 10 years. And I didn't tell anybody until last year because it started getting really bad. And I was just coming out of just like a really, really hard relationship. And, you know, you're living away from home and you're kind of away from the people that love and support you. And even though they're still there and you can pick up the phone and call them or text them, I think you like learn to isolate yourself a little bit because mm-hmm. you don't think you can turn back, you know? And I just stopped eating and I lost about 45 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like 30 pounds lighter than I am right now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I weighed 135 pounds.
So like if the wind blew, you literally couldn't get back up because you don't.
Gross. Like people tell me all the time, they'd ask, are you sick? Like, what's wrong with you? You know? And since I'm pretty tall and like, I like even at that skinny, like I have a pretty curvy figure. It wasn't like super noticeable to people except people that saw me every day. So like my coworkers and stuff. And then I think when I went home over Christmas, one of my mom's friends like hugged me and she just like hugged me and then kind of like leaned back a little bit and looked at me and just like touched my face, you know, like she was kind of like patting me down, like trying to figure out what happened because it was lighter than I'd even been in high school, you know.
Wow.
In high school, I was in like sports, I was very active. Like it was harder to tell because I had muscle on me. I was like, you know, engaged in actually actual physical exercise. And last year I was just so emaciated that it just looked wrong, you mm-hmm. know, it didn't look like me. And when you're unhealthy like that, when you're not feeling good, I think you also like disengage from the spirit a little bit. And I think people can really see that, like it shows in your character. And that was the scariest part for me, was that I could see all of my relationships around me just declining at such a rapid pace.
Mm-hmm.
My relationship with my mom was just so disfigured and dysfunctional, you know, and I had always had such a good relationship with her, even though I had hid that from her most of my life. She was my best friend, you know, I was her only daughter and we spent so much time together, and she taught me like everything that I needed to know. And my parents raised me to have healthy self-esteem, and they always told me I was beautiful, and they always took the measures to try and make me feel good about myself. But I think at the end of the day, people need to understand that it's not like it's my mom's fault or my dad's fault.
Sure.
You know, people like to point fingers, like especially in psychology, they're like, oh, well, what did your mom do?
Yeah.
It's not my mom's fault. She, if anything, she raised me to have a healthy self-esteem and to treat others the same way that she treated me. And I just think that I had a lot of experiences with like coaches, and obviously like being the only 6 foot tall girl in my school, being the only white girl in my school, like being that kind of minority.
Sure.
It's not something you ever hear about, you know, a white girl who's 6 feet tall is a minority. That's terrible.
Right.
That never happens.
Yeah, oh, poor
you know
baby.
What I mean?
Yeah.
I get so much backlash on the internet. They're like, you don't know what it's like to be discriminated against, but I'd say I know better than anybody. I told you, I was one of like 3 white girls in my high school, you know? And while nobody ever really said to me, like, you're different or you're ugly or, you know, nobody ever really said anything negative, but it's just that feeling of looking around and realizing I'm not as small as that girl is, or I'm not as petite as these girls are, you know? And I was on the cheer squad, so when you take, like, 10 girls from the school at random, I was the only white girl on my cheer squad most years, you know? Yeah. And I was the tallest. And so I think it just kind of, like, gets inside your head a little bit, and you start to feel like, okay, like I need to change because these people can't change to meet my level, you know?
And how can I change to be like them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then when I started getting older, it just kind of started to perpetuate more and more, even though I was more around people who are, you know, this like more the same, like LDS, Caucasian, whatever, you know, blonde. I think it just kept perpetuating post high school because you keep like looking around and comparing yourself. You can't find your niche. You can't find like where you fit in, you know? And I always thought like, oh, I'd go to BYU after high school and I'd be the same as everybody else and it'd be so much easier. But I think it kind of like keeps going because you never address it, you know?
So what was the turning point?
The turning point was last year. So I had told you guys before, I was at my lowest weight I'd ever been, like, since I started struggling with the disorders. And my parents and I were just kind of going back and forth for several months. And I had finally let them in and told them, like, this is something I'm struggling with. It's hard. It was in conjunction with, you know, ending this really bad relationship and trying to, like, stay active in the church and trying to, you know, do all the things that, like, the Mormon girl is supposed to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And my parents were just like, Keitra, you just need to like take care of yourself. You know, you need to turn to the Savior. You need to ask him what he should do to help you, you know, what you should do to help yourself. And you need to just apply the atonement in your life in a way that's different than you've ever applied it before. And so that really caused me to kind of just like, okay, like I can do this, you know? And I started kind of listening to their counsel a little bit, turning more towards the Spirit, turning more towards prayer to help me. And I also started to serve other people because that was something my dad said would go the longest way. And he was a bishop in our home ward for a really long time, and he served on the high council and stuff. And so I know, like, he's seen, you know, and he's helped people who've struggled with all sorts of things. And he told me, he's like, the number one thing that you can do is look outside of yourself, go to church, get a calling, serve other people, because that will make you less egocentric. You know, you won't worry so much about how you look or how others perceive you because you're too busy focusing in on the work, you know? So I started just doing little things every day. It started just like with my roommates, ward members, you know, people that I worked with, and kind of started adopting the attitude of, I was joking with my roommate about this the other day, currency in the form of favors, you know? It's not like you expect anything back, but you learn really quickly that when you're doing things for people and you're helping them, like, you're way more likely to get the help you need yourself.
Yeah.
So really quickly, I started receiving just the most amazing forms of inspiration and help and love from some of my roommates and from some of my sisters in Chi Omega once I rushed a sorority, and it just kind of escalated from there. And I feel like now I'm better. Now I'm at a point where I don't worry so much, you know? I don't worry because I finally learned how to let go, to put my burdens on the Savior, and to be able to help other people who are struggling with things that are similar and sometimes even things that are different. You'd be amazed at how, like, interchangeable our issues are, you know? Yeah. How interchangeable the things we struggle with are, because you can take what you're struggling with and erase it and fill it with somebody else's problem, and suddenly you're looking at, like, the same solution, you know? Suddenly you're looking at, like, this ability to just like help people. And I feel like especially lately I've received so many emails from people because my story has been more publicized, you know, and I don't like that it's been like a victimization thing, you know, Taylor Swift doppelganger, bullied for being heavier. I hate that. I do not want to be a victim, but I love the idea that I can use this as a catalyst for my progression, as a catalyst to help other people who are struggling with the same thing, and to let them know, like, okay, yeah, all these people come on my page and say, you're perfect, you look like Taylor, but at the end of the day, like, I struggle with something, but I'm getting over it, you know? And you can too. You don't have to struggle in silence anymore. I feel like it's really taboo in Mormon culture and really in anywhere else to talk about these things and to say, I have this problem. But when you finally own up to it and you're willing to to open up. And it's not like you have to push on everybody, you know, when you're willing to just kind of, okay, like admit you have a problem, seek the help that you need, and maybe even talk to a couple people who love you about it, you'd be amazed at how quickly the turnaround rate is, yeah. how quickly you can get better. I mean, I struggled for 10 years. That's a long time. Yep. Without telling anybody. And as soon as I opened up and started talking to people, yeah, it took me about a year to get into some good, like, standing ground. But I'm so much more different than I've ever been. And if you ask anybody in my family or any of my friends, they'll totally agree with you. Like, I'm such a new person, and I really feel that. And I know that it's not just because of my own efforts or even because of things that people have told me. I know for a fact that it's because of my Savior Jesus Christ and his ability to take that burden off of me. And for my parents and all of their goodness and their strong testimonies and their ability to look at a situation calmly and say, we love you, this is what you need to do. And not, you know, we love you, get better, or yeah, we love yeah, you, right. fix it. Yeah. You know, they were just they took it from such a strong approach without making me feel ashamed or making me feel like I couldn't get the help I needed, you know? And I think that's so important. I think, you know, Christ teaches us to love everybody, to look beyond ourselves and just embrace people around us. And I really think that if I've learned anything this last year in my recovery and in getting better, it's been that. That love really is like the answer to all of our problems, whether it's loving yourself or loving somebody else.
Wow. We just got deep there. This is great.
Hi, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. Many of our customers are computer experts with decades of experience that are so smart they know how to build their own computers with their own bare hands. Yet they buy their computers from PC Laptops because of one thing: the PC Laptops desktop lifetime parts and labor warranty. If a video card blows up, normally you'd have to mail it to Chumbawamba for weeks to get service. Imagine having your computer down for weeks. Experts buy from PC Laptops because time is money. And if you have a part fail on your PC Laptops desktop, we will replace it forever for free. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $7.99 with a lifetime warranty at any PC Laptops locations. While supplies last, $7.99, you can't beat that deal. Please visit us at any one of our locations right now. Call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Desktop computers with a lifetime warranty for just $7.99.
Taking a minute to tell you about CustomLDSScriptures.com. You can go to CustomLDSScriptures.com just by typing that in, or there's a link at theculturalhall.com and check it out. Awesome customized LDS scriptures, whether it's for someone getting the priesthood, getting baptized, your husband or wife for the holiday season, whatever it is, check it out. CustomLDSScriptures.com. It's the scriptures that you know and love with a cool, awesome cover. All sorts of different kinds. You can see varying prices, styles, old and new school, all that kind of stuff. Just go to CustomLDSScriptures.com and be sure to use the promo code TCH.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
So obviously, though, we do want to ask you about this, and you made reference to it. You don't just want to be a Taylor Swift, not Smith. That's a whole different person.
Doppelganger.
A Taylor Swift doppelganger. But that certainly is part of your life. How did that start coming about?
What's the genesis of that?
So I started getting it a lot in high school. Actually, I got stopped for.
And you're only 21 now, so that's within the last 5 years.
Yeah. Okay. So when I was a sophomore in high school, which was 2010, so 6 years ago, I went to her concert in Washington, and I got stopped by a lot of people there. And I have naturally curly hair, you know, I was doing like the bohemian kind of cowboy boots style because I grew up on a farm. Yeah. I'm entitled to do that.
Because I can do it.
I'm allowed, but I was kind of doing that whole, you know, country vibe, and she was more in the country style then, and people kept stopping me, and they're like, you look like her. And I got it a little bit in high school, but again, I grew up in a really kind of sheltered area.
I ain't never heard it.
You know? Yeah.
Is that Chris Ledoux's daughter?
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
But it just kind of escalated. And then I went up to Rick's and I didn't really start getting it a lot more until I chopped my bangs, which I don't know. Like, people always ask me, if you could go back, like, would you have done it again? I think I would have because I like my bangs. Like, right. I like the blunt
style. They look great on you.
And
so it wasn't an intentional thing where you're like, I bet if I chop my hair to these bangs, I'll look more like...
No. Okay. I was cutting my boyfriend's hair.
Yeah.
Practicing.
Yeah.
It turned out great. I was like, you know, I want to do something different because my hair was just at like a really in between funny level and I just want to try something new. So I cut the blunt bangs. I wanted to go for like the Zooey Deschanel look.
Sure.
Yeah.
But nobody ever tells me I look like her.
No.
No.
Or that I'm copying her.
Yeah.
No. Because I need to dye my hair black or something. But yeah, so I just chopped them and then my mom didn't like them at first, but I think they grew on her. I hope they grew on her. Yeah. But I cut them and then I just kind of kept cutting them. I cut them myself the first time and there's only been one hairstylist since then. It's been almost 3 years who's touched them because I'm very picky about them. I like them to be a certain way. But right after I cut my bangs and put extensions back in, Taylor chopped her hair.
Yeah.
And so I was getting a lot of like, oh, you should do the same thing. And then I was like freaking out, like, I don't want it. There's just like this certain level of like, I don't know, like you get it all the time, but you don't want to like pursue looking like her because you don't want people to think you're a wannabe.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But when the resemblance is as close as people say our resemblance is,
yes,
it's kind of hard to like even get dressed in the morning sometimes.
Right.
You know, because you put something on and you're like,
What would Taylor wear?
Yeah.
Or well, and the other thing, she wear?
Yeah, and you're fashionable, and she's fashionable, right. So you'll pick something out, and it's like, well, that's just something that I would pick.
Exactly.
But it also happens to be something that she would maybe pick to wear.
With the modeling, I have other people doing my hair and my makeup and picking my wardrobe, and I still get people come on my page, and they're like, stop trying to copy Taylor. Stop. You dress just like her. I'm like, honestly, she's been around for almost a full decade. You would think she's gone through enough styles and hairstyles and makeup looks that anything I do could look like her. You know, right. It could be interpreted.
You can't
that
win.
Way. You really can't. And so
you just have to wear sweats and a t-shirt.
Yeah,
you just have to go. Just get up, brush your hair, put something on, and go. Because people are gonna find something to pick you apart, regardless. You know, you get people all the time. Lose weight. Don't lose weight. Change your makeup. Don't change your makeup. Change your hair. Don't change your hair. You look like her here. You don't look like her here. Why are you trying so hard? You don't look anything like her. I just sit there and sit back and think, what the heck?
Where are you getting? Are these comments coming through Instagram or Facebook?
It's Instagram, Facebook. I see, you know, some of my friends and family will like repost the articles or like the videos or whatever.
And then you'll see the comments.
I get the comments.
Yeah.
And it's just some, I mean, it's like my mom texts me one day. She's like, just turn it all off.
Yeah.
Just turn off your phone and just take a day to just.
Is it ever kind of fun though? Because
sometimes it's fun.
Because like this year, people, for whatever reason, say that I look like Woody Harrelson, and I don't think that I do. But I had Woody Harrelson. You don't know who that is?
I don't know.
From Zombieland. He was in Cheers. If you
no,
forget it.
He's Hamish in
Hunger
exactly
Games.
Like him.
No, I don't.
Hamish in Hunger Games.
In Hunger Games. There you go.
Yeah, put away. You should be Hamish for Halloween.
So I did. So I had a flannel on and I had a cap on. And I was up at Sundance and I got stopped by two different people. Hey, can I get my picture taken with you? And that was kind of cool.
Right.
I don't think that I look like him at all. Whereas you look, I think, really close for Taylor Swift. I think for me, if I actually looked like someone, it would be a little bit hard for me to not sort of pursue that a little bit.
Yeah.
But I just don't look like anyone.
So
I can see that though, now that you said it.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah.
So what was kind of like your, I wouldn't say big break, but what kind of thrust you into the forefront of this whole Taylor Swift thing?
Okay, last September, Alex Boy put up a picture of Taylor Swift and was like, tag people that look like Taylor Swift, or I need a Taylor Swift look like, or something along those lines. And I didn't know who he was because I grew up in Washington.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get that. But a lot of my friends up at Rick's and stuff were like fans of him, and they saw the picture and they're like, oh my gosh. So they started tagging me. Keetra Jane, you have to pick her. Like, get her to do it, you know? And then other people would look me up because my name was tagged so many times. And so I had complete strangers who were like, oh my gosh, this girl. You know?
Yeah.
Keetra Jane, do her. And I was like, I don't want to do that because I'd kind of just, you know, I'd been raised like, have your own identity, be your own person, be yourself, do your own thing. So
you mean you weren't raised in a be a doppelganger, try and look like someone else culture, huh? Okay. Well, good.
Not a compound, just regular family home. But I, you know, my parents have always encouraged me to be creative, be, you know, do what I want to do essentially. And so it was kind of weird. I don't know. I just didn't want to pursue it in that moment. I was like, this is strange. But so many people were like pushing me to do it. I was like, okay, I'll just do it. So I sent him my information and he emailed me back and was like, we're doing a Taylor Swift lookalike contest on TV. Like, do you want to be a part of it? Mm-hmm. And no.
No, honestly, I don't. No. As a matter of fact, no.
Not particularly, but okay. And so I went and did it. And I've done pageants, public speaking, all sorts of things, musical theater in high school. So I wasn't even scared. I'm not afraid of being on camera or being in front of people or even talking like we are now. But it was just kind of weird to like wake up and try to look like Taylor and then show up on the show, you know, try to look like Taylor with other girls who are trying to look like Taylor. And it was almost like a depressing day for me. Yeah. So it's just like, I feel like such a sellout. But afterwards, it was super fun. I was with Brooke Walker on Studio 5, KSL locally. She's just super nice, so full of energy. And of course, meeting Alex was just like, because I had, you know, figured out who he was, watched all of his videos, like looked at all his music. I'm like, this guy's a legend.
Yep.
Holy cow. Talk about redefining music.
Right.
You know, he's just
lead singer of Awesome. Have you seen his boy band?
That was his boy band.
Yeah. Look up his boy
England.
Band in
okay,
England.
Well, now I have to do that.
Yeah. It was like but 20 years ago.
He's just so like, he's just such an inspiration. He's so clever and just smart and catchy, you know? So we got a picture together and it was funny because as soon as I walked in on the show, people were like, oh, that's Taylor. Or that's the one.
Like, you're the winner.
Yeah.
Ta-da.
And they told me later that I swept it with, like, I think, like, 80% of the out of the four girls.
Yeah.
And even the girls were like, you look so much like her. I'm done, you know?
I'm going
like,
to go
it's
home.
Not, and I just, I don't get it because I look in the mirror and I'm like, I don't really don't see it. But, okay, you know, people tell me, when people
all the
tell
redheaded
you
girls
enough,
are like, no.
But, yeah, so that aired. And then I, you know, got a little more followers after the show aired and after I won and everything. And then we filmed the video in October.
Yeah.
And so it was just a waiting period. So in the meantime, I was kind of cultivating my portfolio a little bit, doing some modeling jobs that really didn't have anything to do with the Taylor Swift thing. But then after the video hit, all of a sudden it was like, and I was just getting offers left and right from people who wanted to promote stuff on my Instagram, from collaborators, from people locally who wanted me to, you know, promote their brand and stuff. And it's kind of been nice. I've been saving up a little bit for my next semester of college.
That's
and,
great.
You know, I nanny on the side and make some money doing that to pay rent, and everything else is covered by modeling, which I didn't think I'd ever do. It's kind of a random tangent to my life, you know, but it's fun and I enjoy it.
And I'm looking at your Instagram. You have 23,000 followers, but a lot of your photos don't feel Taylor Swift-y to me at all. It's very unique and it's very you.
Thanks.
I think this is awesome. And
where can people? It's at what?
Keitra Jane.
Keitra Jane.
KEITRAJANE.
That's how people can find and follow you. Is it that same on Twitter and on Facebook as
it's
well?
It's the same on everything.
Okay.
YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, my website.
And we were chatting a little bit earlier about how now you're kind of getting a couple more endorsements. You're doing sunglasses and things like
lots
that.
Lots of sunglasses.
And by the way, I'll buy some wooden sunglasses. You let me know. I'll buy them straight across.
Do you want mine? Because I have like six pairs at this point.
I'll help pay for your college. So. I feel good about that investment.
They're like $200 sunglasses.
Done.
So I'll give them to you for like 50.
Done. If they fit and look good, I'll buy them, sure.
Yeah.
I'll help pay for college books or something like that. So let me ask you this, because we only got just a couple more minutes now. What do you plan to do with that specifically in the future? I know you're talking about going to school. You want to do, you know,
psychology.
Psychology and be able to help those that have struggled with, you know, illnesses and body image things and stuff like that. Do you plan on trying to pursue this as far as the Taylor Swift or will?
No.
At all?
I have some ideas for you afterwards that we can talk about. I don't want to be your agent, but I have... You know,
don't let him be your agent. He'll take 45%.
I mean, I've made a little bit of money off of it. You know, not exactly the Taylor Swift thing, but just her likeness has given me more of a platform to, one, talk about issues that surround body dysmorphia and internet bullying, and two, to be able to get jobs based on the fact that I'm already a very recognizable face, you know? So it's been helpful in that way, but as far as like being like, people always ask me, do you want to be a double? Do you want to, you know, go and be like one of those people that fools people on the street so they think she's in a different city or whatever, you know? And I feel like there's no real value to doing that
right. When
I have this opportunity to do something that's so much better.
More.
That can help so many more people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not that, you know, the people who do that, that's great. Good for them. Like, they found something they're good at. But for me, I don't want to just base my life off of looking like somebody else, you know?
Well, you have a little bit more substance to you, you know? You're not seeking fame.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true.
You have a platform that you can share.
I don't want to accuse other people of being, like, insubstantial, but yeah, I
do. We will. We'll accuse them. Those people are insubstantial.
I just don't want to...
No, I like it. No.
I don't want to be famous.
Yeah.
You know?
Right,
I want to do my thing. I want to help people. If,
yeah,
like, we're talking ultimate goals here, I want to get my bachelor's in psychology. I want to go on and do a program with that.
Yeah.
And then I think it'd be great to just open some clinics. They have, like, Center for Change here.
Yeah.
That helps people with eating disorders. I think it'd be great to open some of those that are just in places that don't have access to things like that.
Yeah.
I had one of my really close friends was down at the Westridge Academy here in Salt Lake. And some of the kids there are from as far as like New York City, and their parents spend all of their money to get them here. And then they never get to see them for like a year or 2 years, you know? And that just breaks my heart, because so much of my change was based around the idea that I had this family unit, this family that was like loving me and supporting me and continuing to be there for me, even from far away. But I could jump on a plane or jump in the car and get there in a day, you know? For these people, that's not necessarily true. So I think it'd be really great to just open some really accessible clinics that are financially available and physically available to people who need them, you know, so they can be close to home, so they can be with people that love them and support them and have that sense of community while getting better and overcoming these problems and these obstacles, you know. I feel like that would just be so much more beneficial to people than just being
someone who
looks like Taylor.
And you did the thing with Steve Harvey, and you were able to talk about your platform for a minute, right?
Yeah, about a minute. They kind of cut it a little bit.
Was that the hope of you being able to be on that show, is kind of share some of your platform?
Yeah. So originally they said my segment was supposed to be longer. Then they changed it to a question. Then they gave me like a script. And even as much as I talk a lot, you guys could probably gather that.
No,
even
what?
As much as I talked on the show, they cut quite a bit out. But it wasn't, I don't think it was like a malicious cutting.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote an article recently that was like, Taylor Swift doppelganger gets cut out by Steve Harvey show, like talks about God and nobody wants to know or something, you
right,
know, ridiculous like that. And like, yeah, cool. Thanks for the article. Thanks for my recognition. But I wasn't mad. You know, I wasn't upset that they cut what I said. And all I said was, hey, we're all children of God.
Right.
And we should treat each other.
Actually, we're going to have to go back and cut that.
I'm
just
not
teasing.
Again.
But
they did keep in there that I was LDS and Mormon, which I thought was funny. So,
right. Of all the things. Know? I can guarantee you, from someone who produces and does stuff for content, probably what it was is they went, okay, we've got an hour. What can we do?
Exactly.
And we'll take 45 seconds from her.
And it wasn't a big part of the show.
Right.
You know, I was like one of the opening questions or something. So,
but I still think it was a really good segment. I mean, it does highlight more Steve Harvey than you, but I think you presented
yourself really
well.
That's because he's part of the Black Panthers. No?
No.
All right, fine.
I want to
sorry. Inside joke with myself.
Yes.
I want to ask you three questions before we let you go.
Okay. Sure.
We ask these to everyone who steps into the cultural hall, so let's do this now. First of all, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it in your ward?
Activities chair. You don't know.
It's probably one of those College Board callings where it's like, we do
the greeting committee.
The treats on Sunday. Do you have a calling?
I do have a calling. I know it involves party planning, but I can't remember.
Activities.
Yeah, I did the Christmas party, and then, it must be activities. I can't
there
remember what the name is. I'm sitting here like an idiot.
Activities Auxiliary.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds good.
And everyone names it something different, too, where it's like,
that's so
all right.
True.
The second one is, if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that you get to make up yourself or one that already exists, what would you pick and why?
Oh, if we had like flowers every week, I would love to do that. Floral arrangements.
That's awesome.
I was also the ward chorister once, and I loved that job. Even though
I'm not
very good at it, it was super fun. And it gave me motivation to like look cute every week. So
Cool.
And then the final question that we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I'd say my favorite part of our faith is something that I don't feel like everybody else believes, and that's the idea that families can be together forever. It's so important to me. I grew up in a super, like, large extended family, and when you, like, have as many grandparents as I had, you start to lose people early in life, you know, and you have this, like, fear and this feeling that you'll never see them again. It's really sad. But through our church and through our gospel, we believe in the atonement of the Savior Jesus Christ. We believe that families can be together forever through the work in the temple. And we also believe in being able to go back and do work for people who haven't done it for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that is just so beautiful and such an eternal truth. And I don't know if I could honestly, like, exist or be happy or content in a religion that didn't believe that, that didn't believe that we could see each other after this life. Mm-hmm. This life is so fleeting. There's so many different circumstances that surround it, so many, you know, sicknesses and just issues and sadnesses. And when you think about the idea that you can be with the people you love forever and you can live in this afterlife and create your own worlds and, you know, just be, exist and be in, like, the happiest state possible, that's so incredible and so amazing to me. And I don't think it seems far-fetched at all, you know? I think it's something that's very attainable, because I think in some ways we experience that same happiness here when you get married, when you have kids, when you are spending, like, just really, like, rich moments with your family, you know? And that's something I try to carry with me every day as I make choices, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Okay, think about the future. Like, think about the ultimate goal, because I think sometimes we get sidetracked by the shininess of the world we live in now and, you know, some of the grime even. You just kind of get sidetracked. But when you really realize that there's so much more to our existence here, and that this really is just a test, and how we do here determines our outcome in the afterlife, you really start to focus in and realize, okay, like, this is a beautiful plan. This is a beautiful place to prepare me for that plan. And that keeps me going throughout the day.
Cool. Well, that's it then. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
If you're feeling ill or sick or afflicted, we hope to hear from you next week.
And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row.
Of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. On the back row, we read.